everyone, and thanks again for joining today's call. We're thrilled to have Franz Litz with us today. I'm Ed Meyer, partnering with Business Forward, and I'm going to be moderating the conversation. Currently, all lines are in listen-only mode. Franz was a driving force behind the development and launch of the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, also known as REGGIE, the multi-state program that has dramatically reduced emissions from the power sector across the Northeast and Mid-Atlantic regions. He brings over 25 years of experience in environment and energy to his work, consulting to state government, think tanks, nonprofit organizations, and industry. And we've asked Franz today to talk briefly about how REGGIE works, how the small business community benefits and will benefit, and how falling wind and solar prices are helping, and which states are likely to join next. Before I get started, I do want to cover some housekeeping notes. As part of the email confirmation you received after registering, it says, quote, open visual interface. Click on that link to view today's presentation that Franz is going to be going through. The slides are also available on our website at businessfwd.org, in case you're having any trouble with that, and look for the post advertising this event, and the slides are there. You can participate in two ways. You can email your question to us at info@businessfwd.org, and we'll read it aloud. Please note the name of your business and where you live in your message. Again, that's info@businessfwd.org. You can also press 1 on your dial pad at any time to be entered into the queue to ask a question live. We'll get to as many of these as we can in the time that we have with Franz. Please note this call is on the record and there may be reporters present. Franz, thank you for joining us today, and please go ahead.
Great. Thank you, Ed, and thank you, Business Forward, for having me today. So as Ed mentioned, I was involved in the design and early implementation steps for the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative. I did that from a post in New York at the New York Department of Environmental Conservation. And it was Governor George Pataki, New York's last Republican governor, who got REGGIE started. And at the time REGGIE started, 6 out of the 9 participating states were led by Republicans. And over time, this has stayed true. There has been a bipartisan mix of governors actively participating in REGGIE. It launched in early 2009. Actually, the first auctions were in late 2008, and the MOU that the governor signed to make this happen took place in December of 2005. So it's quite some time ago now. The program has more than 10 years of experience under its belt. Since leaving my post in New York, I've worked as a facilitator of stakeholders in the REGGIE region to weigh in on various aspects of the program as it's been revised over time. More recently, I worked with the Commonwealth of Virginia in helping it to craft its rule, which will bring Virginia into the program in 2021, and most recently doing some work analyzing what would happen if North Carolina were to take a similar step as Virginia. And then, as some of you may know, Pennsylvania's governor announced that Pennsylvania will be taking steps to become part of the regional collaborative as well. And he ordered his Department of Environmental Protection to do a rule that would effectuate that by July of next year. So what is currently a 9-state program, the 6 New England states, New York, New Jersey, Delaware, Maryland, will soon be 10 states when New Jersey returns in 2020, and then 11 when Virginia joins in 2021. And perhaps soon after that, it'll be 12 with Pennsylvania, assuming all goes well with Pennsylvania steps. So it's a regional program. It's a cap and invest program. And you can go to the next slide. And what I want to do is leave you today with a really good sense of what REGGIE is how it works. There are really 2 components of REGGIE that make change happen. The first is the cap. And it's often called a cap and invest program. And the 2 parts are right in that name, the cap and invest. On the cap side, REGGIE is designed to cap and then reduce emissions from the sources that it's covered, which are power plants. And on the invest side, it generates funds that then get invested in good stuff. And I'm going to get into how this all works. When when a state is thinking about joining a program like REGI or taking part in it, like Pennsylvania, the first thing it has done is identify the sources that it would be covered, in this case, power plants, what the emissions level is the next thing it needs to know. And then it has to decide on what reduction pathway those emission sources will follow. And we're going to talk about all three of those. I also want to touch on the core mechanics of the program so you'll understand how it works. And one important feature of the program, which keeps costs within a reasonable range. And I talk a little bit about how the regional collaborative works across states. You can go to the next slide. So going from left to right on this slide, the slide that reads, what is the starting point for the cap? On the left-hand side, we'll go left to right. You first ask, what sources are you going to cover in a program like this? And in the case of REGI, the sources were fossil fuel-fired power plants, natural gas plants, coal plants, and there are still some, believe it or not, oil-fired plants on the system. And then we asked ourselves, and this is a question Pennsylvania will have to ask, what are the starting emissions? What are the emissions today from all of the power plants that would be covered by the program? And that gives you a sense of where your starting point is. And then you essentially decide what your initial emissions budget is. And just like a budget for your house, you're essentially saying, all right, how many tons are we going to permit to come out of this collection of sources? And each one of those tons is represented as a pebble in that bucket on the right. And we call those allowances because each one allows a plant to emit a ton of emissions. Next slide. So once you've decided which sources you're covering and you get a sense of where they've started, you know the baseline emissions. That's today. And then we often we think about it in terms of, well, what's going to happen from this sector anyway if nothing is done? And we think of that as the business as usual projection. And then we often also then say, well, what cap, declining cap, can we afford, or do we want to see happen? Do we want to pay for it? And we use computer modeling to run the system and test different stringencies to tell us what the cost of and other impacts of the program might be. Next slide. REGI, if you're looking at it from the perspective of a state, a state essentially has a couple of jobs. One is to determine who's covered by the cap. We said that already, power plants. The next is to figure out what the starting cap will be, the number of pebbles you're going to issue, allowances. And then the other key thing is to figure out how to distribute the allowances. And I said REGI is called a cap and invest program. And if you go to the next slide, the way allowances are typically distributed throughout the REGI region is through auction there in the center. And when they auction those allowances on a quarterly basis, they end up with some money that they can then invest. There are other ways that this can be done. And we saw in the state of Virginia, they decided to directly allocate the allowances to their affected utilities. And then those utilities are going to submit the allowances to auction and get the revenue back. In that case, it made sense because, unlike all of the other states that have joined REGI to date, Virginia has vertically integrated utilities that are regulated by the state utility commission. And so the effect of the value of those allowances is all subject to economic regulation by the state and will presumably therefore benefit consumers. But an allowance distribution really matters because the state is creating these allowances or permits to emit, and they have value. And so distributing allowances is like handing out value. So in the case of most of the REGI states, they've chosen to auction and to capture that value for the public benefit. Next slide. Now, if I'm a power plant under this kind of a program, my compliance obligation is fairly straightforward. There are really only two things I have to do. One is I have to measure and monitor and report my carbon dioxide emissions, and that's depicted there in a CO2 meter above each of the plants that I've drawn in there. It was lucky for us when we started, Reggie, these plants were already measuring and monitoring and reporting their emissions, and they still do under the Federal Clean Air Act amendments of 1990 that George H.W. Bush oversaw and signed into law. So measuring and monitoring and reporting carbon dioxide emissions has been a thing for quite some time, and that was already being done. The new thing that power plants had to do under Reggie and that they've been doing over the past 10 plus years is periodically they must turn in enough allowances to cover the emissions that they've reported. And so that is how we make sure, if we're implementing a program like this, that emissions do not exceed the number of allowances that are put into the system. It's a fairly straightforward and elegant result. Units are all connected by a tracking system, and they can trade allowances between each other and transfer them between accounts. And this kind of a program is sometimes called cap and trade for that reason. So if I'm a power plant, those are my obligations: report, monitor, and measure, monitor, and report my emissions, and cover my emissions periodically. In Reggie's case, every 3 years with allowances. If I'm the government, this also shows my remaining obligation, and that is to make sure that sources are complying. And at the end of every compliance period, I essentially just have to check to make sure that the allowance accounts are enough to cover the emissions from the source. And if they are, they're in compliance. If they're not, they're out of compliance. And the compliance record for these programs has been really, really outstanding. Very little noncompliance. So far we've learned how the cap is set and how the system makes sure that the cap is met. It does that by only issuing enough allowances to equal the total cap that's allowed, and by requiring all the sources to measure and monitor their emissions and cover every ton that they emit with one allowance. So that's how we make sure that there's environmental integrity, and the number of allowances that are issued decreases every year. That's the declining cap. And so over time, we're assured a reduction in emissions from all the sources combined. We also care about price, though. And if you go to the next slide, a cap and invest program or a cap and trade program is primarily focused on getting an emissions result, as I just described. But those allowances will have a value, and that value will be determined, you know, by the laws of supply and demand. In the Reggie market, there are those quarterly auctions that I mentioned, and those auctions yield a clearing price. So you can go on the Reggie.org website and you can see what the auction clearing prices have been, or if you're thinking of buying allowances or selling them, you want to know what the most recent clearing price was. And lately they've been in the between $5 and $6 marks, so not a large amount in terms of a carbon price. The other way you can find out what the prices of allowances are is to look at what is called the secondary market. There are brokers out there that will bring sellers of allowances together with buyers of allowances, and they operate trading desks, and like other commodities, they will publish the going price for allowances. And you can do a search right now if you like, Reggie allowance price, and you'll see a few of those broker sites pop up, and they'll tell you what they think the current allowance price is based on their transactional experience. So there's an allowance price. And if you're designing a program, and like Governor Wolf, Pennsylvania, last week decided to bring his state into Reggie, he's going to be concerned about what the cost of those allowances are. And as I mentioned, they'll use computer modeling to give them a sense about going forward prices. I'm going to show you a slide in a minute that shows you the track record of prices to date. But if you go to the next slide, one of the nice things that Reggie has done, if you follow the debates about carbon policy, you know, one of the common debates is, do we do cap and trade or cap and invest, where we're sure that we'll get an emissions result on the one hand, or do we do a carbon tax on the other, where we're very sure about how much each ton is going to cost, because that's predetermined in a carbon tax. Well, Reggie doesn't have a predetermined price for allowances, but they do They are concerned about keeping the allowance price within a reasonable range. So they've implemented two mechanisms in the program. One is called the cost containment reserve. The other is called the emissions containment reserve. And if the cost of allowances goes above a prescribed threshold, then it'll essentially release a new allowances into the market, pour them into the bucket as shown there. But if it turns out that the emissions are decreasing more rapidly than they thought, their sources are over complying because costs are lower than they expected, then the allowance price will in turn be lower than expected, and they have this ECR threshold that pulls allowances out. So essentially, you can think about that as a cap mechanism that changes how quickly the allowance reductions happen based on the cost of allowances. It's a pretty innovative thing. The European Union has followed the lead, and they're implementing something similar to the ECR after watching Reggie implement it. California has a cost containment reserve in their program. You can go to the next slide. You can see it here more graphically. They did the computer modeling, and they said, all right, here's where we expect the allowance prices to be over time. Let's set the CCR trigger above that range. Let's set the ECR trigger below. And through that process, we will have an automatic mechanism to adjust the stringency of the program to keep the prices of allowances in check, really, within an expected range. So what you have here is sort of a mechanism that makes the cap and invest program a little bit more like a carbon tax, in that it gives a little bit more certainty about what prices one can expect. Next slide. So I wanted to give you a sense. I told you that I was working for New York when Governor Pataki sent the letters out to the other governors that decided to participate. He did that back in 2003, and shortly thereafter we came up with an action plan to get it done. The governors signed an MOU in 2005 and said they would launch the program in the second half of 2008. So it was in the works for a little bit. This was voluntary. Of course, these states did not have to stand up this program, but they did it anyway. This timeline also shows you a couple of things that I want to point out. One of the things we did early on was to say, let's insert a program review into the future of this program, where because this is new and it hasn't been tried before for carbon dioxide, we said let's look back in 2012 to figure out how this program is working and make some adjustments. And I had left the state by then, but the states did in fact do that program review. They made some adjustments. They did that again in 2016, and they'll do it again in 2021. So they've adopted a practice of evaluating the programs with stakeholders and making some fixes. The other thing I want to note here on this timeline is that New Jersey has already adopted its rule. It's in place. It will be part of the program again in 2020. New Jersey had been a part of the program initially, but Governor Christie pulled them out after the first 3 years of the program, and they decided more recently to come back in. So that'll happen in 2020. Bringing it back up to 10 states. Next slide. How has it fared? This is a slide that has a lot of information on it. You have access to the slide, so you can pull it down and have a look at it. The Acadia Center puts this slide together and updates it from time to time. I'll tell you a few things I'd like you to note about the slide. The blue bars that are side by side represent the quarterly emissions from power plants. The ones, the tall bars are the summer emissions, because we, in this region, we tend to generate more electricity in the summer for air conditioning. And what else can you see here? You can see the allowance, the auction clearing price. So that's the black dots connected by the line that's a little squiggly. You can see that early on, the price went to the floor, the auction floor price. And then after the 2012 review, they revised the caps, and there was more scarcity in the allowance market, and the price came up off the floor. And most recently, the price has been between $5 and $6, as you can see from the last four auctions shown there. And you can see the trend line for emissions, which is a fairly steeply declining trend line for the states that are participating. And some people often ask, well, what, natural gas has really pushed out a lot of coal, renewables costs have come down, would this have happened anyway? And the answer is some of the reductions would have happened anyway. That seems pretty clear because we've seen some reductions in the sector outside of the region. But by a very recent accounting, we gave you a link to the Acadia Center report, did a calculation and determined that the emission reductions that the RGGI states have seen are almost double what has occurred without a price signal outside of the region. So I think it's safe to say that the program has locked in emission reductions over time. And there's currently a cap in place through 2030 that will reduce emissions by an additional 30% from 2020 levels, which will put the region somewhere on the order of 70% below 2005 levels by 2030. And if you follow decarbonization studies, you know, the big studies that try to figure out how we as a society might achieve decarbonization, you know that most studies assume that we need to get reduced emissions somewhere between 80 and 100% from the electricity sector by 2050. So this region is showing how it can be done and is well on the path to reaching that kind of a decarbonization goal for the sector. A couple more slides left and then move to questions. Let's quickly note on the next slide. One thing to remember here is RGGI is not a regional program per se. It's actually a bunch of separate state programs, and each state implements a rule. That's what Pennsylvania will have to do. And what connects them together is the mutual acceptance of each other's emissions allowances. And you know, any state can bow out at any time, like New Jersey did. Any other state could volunteer to join the collaboration. What they do is they take advantage of the fact that they're all doing this together, and they collaborate and share program infrastructure. They built an allowance auction platform together, for example. They share a tracking system that's already built. They pay for a market monitor to keep track of the commodities market to make sure there's, you know, no foul play. And there's an organization that they stood up, a technical organization called RGGI Inc. that does all of that stuff really well. And you can go to their website, RGGI.org, if you want to check out some of the kinds of things that they do. Next slide. When Virginia was thinking of joining RGGI, they asked, you know, the other states, well, what does it take to join? And the RGGI states came back and they said, well, we want a compatibility of program design. We want something that's similar to what we have. We want the stringency or ambition to be similar. And we want you to agree to periodically review your rule together with us and make changes together on a consensus basis. And Virginia said, yep, okay, we'll do that. And they after some discussions, came up with their plan forward and adopted a rule. Next slide. That's it for the overview presentation. Happy to take some questions.
Excellent. Thanks so much, Franz. And we're going to now open it up to your questions and comments. And if you have a question, please press 1 to speak live on the call, or if you can email your question to info@businessfwd.org. And please remember to introduce yourself with your business and where you're calling from. We already have several questions that have come in. I'm going to take quick moderator privilege, though, and ask something that's on my mind and maybe on others, which is, how much revenue is generated from this Cap and Invest program, and what are states doing with that? Where are they investing? And do you mind talking for a minute about that?
Yeah, sure. So if you want to get a just back of the envelope sense of how much revenue across all of the states, there are about 75 million tons in the annual budget, RGGI budget, or there will be 75 million tons in the 2020 budget, so next year's. And they're trading at about $5.50 a ton. So we're talking hundreds of millions of dollars a year across all of the states. Once New Jersey is on, you can add 18 million to that number. When Virginia joins a year later, it'll be another 28 million. And Pennsylvania is huge. They have about 85 million. So they will, Pennsylvania is bigger than the current RGGI states combined. And once all of those three states are on board, it'll be 206 million tons in a year. And then you can do that math. It's a $1 billion a year, roughly. It will be once all three states are there. And then, of course, the cap gets smaller over time, so the number of allowances decrease. But there's also an expectation that the price of allowances will increase a little bit to correspond to keep a kind of relatively constant supply of or source of revenue.
Gotcha. Thank you, Franz. Well, let's get to – oh, sorry, go ahead.
Sorry. You also asked, what are they investing in?
Yes.
You can go to that REGI website, REGI.org, and they report on the investments periodically in a kind of objective way to show you how things are spent. And generally speaking, states have spent it on energy efficiency investments, things like also renewables technologies and storage. New York has tended to spend its money on clean energy investments rather than energy efficiency because they have another source of funding for energy efficiency. But mostly, you know, things that might interest your members or participants here, that these are mostly small business enterprises that carry out these energy efficiency projects and, you know, distributed renewables projects and, you know, small and medium-sized storage projects, that sort of thing.
Excellent. Thank you. Getting to some of the questions from callers, we'll start with Sherry Gruder in Madison, Wisconsin. And Sherry asked, has REGI resulted in new local renewable energy development, additionality, and any resilience infrastructure like solar and wind plus storage?
Yeah. So let me say right off the bat that because of the way REGI is designed, it you know, has an aggregate cap that declines, and then it sort of leaves the market to respond to decide who reduces emissions and who covers emissions with allowances. It's essentially setting a carbon price signal that then reverberates in the market. And there are lots of other things going on in that marketplace, right? The cost of renewables is getting better and lower, more attractive and more attractive as each year goes by. The cost of natural gas has been, you know, more or less declining or staying flat in real terms over the period of this program. So it's hard to pinpoint exactly what REGI has caused per se. One thing you can do is you can do what's called a regression analysis, an econometric study. And one of those studies was done by Duke University economists. They looked at the early years of the program and they said, you know, the allowance price sure is small. Did it really do anything? Is this program accomplishing anything? And they concluded from their study that REGI, even though the price was small, could be credited with about 50% share of the emissions, which I think is interesting, especially given the more recent accounting that has been done, which says that REGI emissions have been roughly double what the market has produced outside of REGI. So I think we can safely say it has had an impact. In terms of local renewable energy development, some of the states have spent some of the investment funds in those things. So you could take a look at the report I mentioned and see, you know, which states are doing that. And there's another evaluation that was done by the analysis group, a firm that you may know of, pretty reputable firm that does work for all sectors of the economy. They've evaluated periodically the REGI program and the economic results that it's achieved. And those reports are accessible on the website. It's also, the link is provided, called the REGI Project Series. So check those out there.
Great. And I'm going to get to some more written questions that have come in. But if just to remind folks, if you want to speak live, just press 1 on your phone and we'll call on you. I'm going to go to a question from Alex in Vermont, who's asking about how adaptable the program, the REGI framework, might be to other states and other regions, and what would translate well or what wouldn't. And I guess just sort of adding to that, I would, you know, ask, is it really just a matter of political will in other states, or is it, is it possible a state like Texas, where I'm from, could jump on board, and are there discussions with other states that are outside of that Northeast Mid-Atlantic region?
Yeah, and that's a great question. It is interesting that, you know, it was Virginia who jumped on first, and then Now Pennsylvania has announced they're doing it. North Carolina, in its recent clean energy planning exercise, did evaluate through a bunch of different modeling exercises whether to participate in REGI, and they're still looking at it. But that geographically creates a contiguous region. Maybe there's no coincidence there. But in theory, there's no reason why it has to be contiguous. You know, Illinois could jump in, even though they don't border Pennsylvania. And you know, trade emissions allowances. The result is just that the cheapest reductions would be discovered by the program. They may end up being in Illinois. They may end up being in Pennsylvania. One doesn't know. You're sort of giving that control up to the program. So yeah, it's mostly about political will and initiative. And you could imagine this other states doing this. There's another program called the Western Climate Initiative, and when I left New York, I started working on that. That initially had 7 states in the West, in Intermountain West, looking at an economy-wide cap and trade program that has since been adopted by California. Oregon came very close to adopting it last year, but didn't succeed. New Mexico has announced that they're moving in that direction. You might see Colorado do something similar. In the Midwest, we haven't seen any recent signs that a program like this would be implemented, but who knows?
Well, being a Texan, I'm going to read a question from a fellow Texan, and this is from Jose Gonzalez in Houston. And Jose asks, the effect of both cap and trade and carbon pricing is borne by the consumer, but carbon pricing also generates income, which can be passed on to the consumer, revenue neutral, in order to ease the burden of any increased energy costs, whereas cap and trade seems to leave the individual consumer exposed. What is better, regulating the quantity or regulating the price of carbon emissions?
That is an age-old debate among the policy wonks. In general, I think economists tend to favor the carbon tax. They see it as very simple. But when they talk about the carbon tax, they talk about it as though it's something that could be easily changed once it's put in place. And so because the tax doesn't offer emission certainty, if you're concerned about the emissions going down, you need to think in terms of not only getting the tax passed in the first place, you have to think in terms of the political will over time to adjust that tax. So that's one thing to consider. You be the judge on that. Cap and trade is focused on locking in the emission reductions. You know, some people have said you need a carbon price that's, you know, close to the social cost of carbon, tens of dollars. REGI's been well under $10 for its entire history. It's been functioning at a time when the market is you know, also seeing lower gas prices and lower renewables prices, so that helps. But, you know, maybe it's possible to see emission reductions and lock them in with a lower price, as REGI has demonstrated over time. I want to just, one other thing that's embedded in that question is, it's true the cost gets passed on to consumers, and that's true whether it's a tax or an emission allowance that the power plant has to purchase. And one of the nice things about the revenue generated is most of the states have used it in a way that would tend to provide benefits to those very same consumers. So we know energy efficiency projects, for example, will lower bill, when done properly, will lead to lower bills for consumers. Some states have used the money, as the questioner suggests, for consumer rebates. Maryland did it for about 50% of its revenue. So that's also been done, just giving the money right back and having it show on the bills, which is a kind of revenue neutral concept.
Gotcha. Thank you, Franz. I'm going to ask a question from Paul Sotkowitz. I hope I pronounced that correctly. You've answered this question, I think, in part already, but I'm going to add a little bit more to it. His question is, do the REGI states envision further limiting the available allowances, allowing prices to rise to the social cost of carbon? Has there been any analysis done to see what the impacts of such a move would be on power markets, renewable resource entry, and additional energy efficiency? I think you've talked a little bit about that, but I would love for you to expand on that. And then also, you know, I would add, it sounds like the what you've said is there, you know, we are they are going to be decreasing the number of allowances over time, and that will further reduce carbon emissions and potentially increase the price of those allowances. Has there been any thought to accelerating the decrease in allowances based on the success of the program so far? That would be something I would add to that question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great. It's Paul Sakajevich, I think. Paul, I know Paul, and I've asked I once asked him to say his name into a voice memo on my phone so I could remember how to pronounce it. So hopefully I remembered it correctly. If not, Paul, send me a text to let me know one way or the other. Paul's an economist. A lot of economists will say, gee, we'd be so much better if we were – the whole idea in theory is to capture the externalities that carbon creates, those extra costs that aren't seen in the cost of natural gas or oil. And ideally, if you could get a program to capture all those extra costs and then actually impose them on the people that consume the good, then all would be right with the world. And we'd be sending the right signals to the market, including, you know, renewables would be such an easy choice in that scenario. We'd be wanting to use a lot less energy if we had to pay the full social cost of the carbon associated with the energy. I think that, you know, that's generally true. I know, but as I mentioned, I think it's at least interesting, and maybe this is more of a sociologist way to look at it, but RGGI has been very modest. The prices have been low, and yet it seems to be sending a signal to the market that has reduced emissions more rapidly than the part of the country without RGGI. Now, those same states have done other things, so I don't want to sound too flippant or make this sound too easy. Those states have also been pushing renewable portfolio standards and really aggressively going after energy efficiency opportunities. So, you know, some of it may be down to that. But, you know, I think it's at least an open question. Do we have to pay high carbon prices to send the right signals and to, you know, make good things happen? I think RGGI stands for the proposition that, you know, you can get some stuff done with a modest program.
I'm going to go to Virginia and Glen Allen, Virginia. Karan Dumkara, and again, apologies if I mispronounced the name, but Uni asks, are there any regulatory compliance the companies have to meet in the process? You talk a bit about that in your presentation, and I think I would just add to that question, is there, you know, how has there been cheating, and is there a way to prevent the cheating and enforce, what are the punishments if there is cheating by these companies?
Yeah, you know, I mentioned that this was started by a Republican governor, and this mechanism itself was really the brain child of economists, and it was soldiered initially, is really put forward initially by Republicans who were concerned about the environment, and it's evidenced most prominently in the 1990 amendments of the Clean Air Act when the sulfur dioxide trading program was adopted. And one of the early arguments, and I think it still holds, is that this kind of a program lets the people who know best about the industry decide how the reductions are going to occur. And it's very, very flexible. It's, instead of the government saying, okay, every coal plant of a certain configuration must do X, Y, and Z, it just says, overall, we need this reduction. You all go figure out how to make it happen at least cost. And I think something about the way that design, that mechanism is designed and set up speaks to industries that are used to dealing in commodities. And power plants are certainly an industry that, you know, they have to buy natural gas commodities. They have to, you know, lock up other emission allowance commodities in order to do their business. And it just sort of fits the business model. And one of the results, I think, is that the compliance has been really sky-high compliance levels. There hasn't been cheating. We get the emissions results, just FYI, from a monitor that's on the stacks of the power plants, and a computer sends those results in real time to EPA. So it's a fairly, you know, I'll use the word ironclad. Maybe it's not fair to say that, but it's a pretty robust system for making sure that we know what emissions are coming out of these plants. And we can easily tell whether they've, you know, turned in enough allowances to cover those emissions. So it's robust and program with integrity, I think we can say.
Great. And Franz, we're getting to the end of our time here. I want to close with a question around small businesses and how they can get engaged. Jeffrey Clark in Washington, D.C. asked, how can small businesses get involved? And I think, you know, you have a lot of small local business leaders from around the country on the call today who, might be asking what can they do to be advocates, supporters, champions of this sort of initiative in their home states. And so that's sort of one question. And then two is, you know, you talked about how small businesses are actually already engaged in REGI in terms of being part of the solution and being involved in some of these analyses and studies. So I would love for you to kind of talk about it both from the business point of view for how small businesses can be part of this initiative, and then from the advocacy lens at the state level and states across the country, what local business leaders might be able to do.
Yeah, sure. If you're a business that's operating in the energy efficiency space or the distributed renewable space, you may already know about REGI if you're in one of those states. But if you don't know about it, do a little digging, go to the REGI.org site and look at the report, part of the report that relates to your state, and see where those investments are going. And you may be able to, you may find that, you know, REGI investments are already very, very much present in the work that you do, even if they're not going through you, but there might be a way to get them through you as well. Over time, the states, they rejigger what they invest their money in. So that's another thing to focus on. You might look at the report and find, they're not really involved in my area at the moment. Well, you could go to your state, if they're a REGI state, and say, you know, here's a great opportunity, good investment, and it's going to benefit consumers and have the climate-friendly impacts that you seek, and start moving some of the money in this direction. So that's another place where the folks on the line might engage if they're in an existing REGI state, or in Virginia and Pennsylvania, New Jersey, who presumably are soon to be. And then if you're in a state that doesn't have a program like this, the one thing I would say is that study after study after study after study will point to these market-based mechanisms, whether it's a carbon tax or a cap and trade program, as the cheapest way to get reductions, the lowest cost way. So if you start from the proposition that we need to get the reductions, this ought to be the kind of program that is fairly easy to advocate for, even in other parts of the country. Renewable portfolio standards, for example, if you look at them from the perspective of cost per ton of reduction, they are more expensive than a cap and trade. Of course, they bring other benefits, local investments, and so I'm not saying they shouldn't do that, but any state that has a renewable portfolio standard, is already paying quite a bit for reductions and ought to be willing to pay a little bit less and have a program like REGI as well. I'm a little biased, as you can tell. But those are some thoughts that come to me.
Excellent. Thank you, Franz. And that is really all the time we have for today. But thank you, Franz, for your time today. And thanks for your leadership in this on this issue. And we really appreciate you sharing the insights with us. And I know everyone, I've certainly learned a lot, and I know everyone on the call has. For those of you that are on the call, please check your email for a post-event survey that's going to be coming your way via email, where you can let us know what you thought of today's call. If you missed any part of this call or would like to share it with other business leaders, you can visit the Business Forward website at businessfwb.org to listen to the podcast and repeat and read a recap of today's call. Our podcast is also available on Spotify, iTunes, and Google Play. Again, thanks so much to Franz and to everyone who joined today's call. We'll look forward to working with you again soon. Have a great evening.